Eye on the World, Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor. David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show, is here as my colleague and co-host. And we're very, very privileged to welcome Eric Berger of Ars Technica, the author of Liftoff, Elon Musk and the Desperate Early Days That Launched SpaceX. It's an exciting story. It has a great punchline. We're thinking that everybody's going to fail, and then they don't. And now here we are, Boca Chica, Texas, for four launches. And Eric's here to help us what was achieved on the fourth launch and what the fifth looks like. Eric, a very good evening to you. Thank you for joining us. The fourth launch, everybody was extremely excited. What did it achieve? What new thing happened perfectly? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John and David. Thanks very much for having me on. The big things that the vehicle achieved were essentially, for the first time, SpaceX got both the rocket and the upper stage Starship vehicle back to Earth. So the rocket, it was really cool to watch. This is the first stage, Super Heavy, with nearly three dozen engines. You could see it come back all the way down to Earth. There was a camera on board the vehicle that showed the engines lighting just above the ocean. So it made a soft landing in the Gulf of Mexico. And that gave them confidence that they could control the Super Heavy booster on its return to Earth. The other really interesting thing was after it separated from the first stage, the Super Heavy upper stage flew on a nominal flight path and came back to Earth into the Indian Ocean. And we were able to follow it all the way down through the atmosphere where it made a controlled entry into the Indian Ocean. So that gave SpaceX confidence that they eventually will be able to recover Starship as well.
So both parts of the launch then were under control as they descended, both parts.
Both parts were, yes. I mean, it got pretty hairy there for a while with the Starship upper stage. There was a camera that looked out on one of the flaps, and you could see it burning up as it was coming back to the atmosphere. But the camera held on, and the vehicle held on, and SpaceX said they got good telemetry, and the engines fired right before the ocean, so it made a soft landing in the Indian Ocean.
Dr. Space, you have a question.
Do we know what they tweaked or repaired after demo test 3 when they had some of those problems coming back versus number 4? How did they fix the problems?
Well, they had the primary issue they had with the Starship vehicle was that it was spinning on the third flight. And so they were able to correct that and also deal with some helium issues that they were experiencing in the upper stage. The big thing now is to take the learnings that they've had from the fourth flight and really try. The really toughest problem that they have to solve still is protecting Starship during its reentry. You know, it's going to be coming back at orbital velocity. They're trying to use tiles, like not like the space shuttle used, but in some ways it is similar. And the real challenge for them is going to be able to both get Starship back safely and then be able to reuse the vehicle fairly quickly, which is the ultimate goal. You know, what really hurt the space shuttle program is you had this army of workers, thousands of people dedicated to refurbishing the vehicle between flights and those tiles. And that just got very expensive. So SpaceX is trying to avoid that with Starship. And that's one of the things they really have to prove.
I want to understand now that they're going to have both pieces return under control. That means that everything that they throw up in the sky comes back down to be reused again. That's the plan. Is that correct, Eric?
That is the plan. The question is how long it's going to take them to achieve it.
Yes, and that's where they get their cost savings. So all of this, what we're watching now, is the first time any of this has been done, both stages to come back under control.
Yeah, we've never seen a fully reusable rocket. Even the space shuttle jettisoned the external tank when it flew.
You know, David, you could miss the fact that we're seeing history in front of us because we're so keen on it being successful. We're not necessarily focusing on the fact that nobody's ever seen this before. You have a question for Eric, David.
It's along a different line, and I'm hoping that the Blue Origin complaints to the FAA don't slow SpaceX down in their test flight process. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So one of the issues that SpaceX has been navigating, in addition to the technical problems of developing Starship, is the regulatory issues. And they've worked with the FAA in South Texas to get permission to launch. And the FAA was pretty helpful to them because even after they blew up the launch pad on their first flight of Starship, you know, they did get back to flight within several months. And now SpaceX wants to have a regular cadence of launches from Florida. It's going to build ultimately two launch towers at Kennedy Space Center and Cape Canaveral Space Force Station in Florida. But because Starship is such a large vehicle and SpaceX is planning so many launches, they've had to go through this process called making an environmental impact statement. And as part of that, some of SpaceX's competitors, including Jeff Bezos's Blue Origin and another company called United Launch Alliance, have filed, you know, documents basically saying that, hey, wait a minute, the FAA really ought to slow this process down and really ought to seriously consider limiting the number of launches, Starship launches, that SpaceX can perform in Florida. On one hand, I think it's totally understandable that the competitors would seek to slow SpaceX down. After all, they're trying to catch up to what SpaceX has done with its Falcon rockets and Starship rockets. But on the other hand, it is a little bit disingenuous, especially for Blue Origin, which seeks to also build rapidly reusable rockets and do something similar. You know, the problem for them is they're just behind SpaceX. And so this looks a little bit like sour grapes.
Looking to test number five, chopsticks. What is the chopsticks, Eric?
So SpaceX has planned for rapid reuse of the first stage. And this is really some sci-fi stuff, John, is to have the rocket come back to the launch pad and literally slow itself down and land vertically right next to the launch tower. And as it's coming down, these two arms, these so-called chopsticks, you know, stick out from the launch pad, launch tower, and the rocket literally sets itself on top of these chopsticks. And then once it's there, it can be bolted down and moved around and set back down on the launch pad. I mean, it's quite a thing because you're taking this skyscraper-sized rocket, bringing it back to launch site and trying to control it. I mean, and if something goes wrong, I mean, you blow up your launch pad. It's a huge deal. So the thinking is that they are actually going to try this chopstick maneuver on the fifth flight later this summer. And boy, you probably want to be watching when that happens.
Now, are we talking about the chopstick catching the Super Heavy or Starship or both?
We're talking about the chopsticks catching the Super Heavy rocket. That, you know, the SpaceX at this point has much more confidence in returning the first stage. I mean, they've done it more than 300 times with the Falcon 9 rocket. Super Heavy is much bigger, but they got a lot of very good data on the last flight when they made a controlled landing in the ocean that has given them enough confidence to probably try this on their next flight.
And Starship would re-enter on its own, and they probably lose it in the ocean this time. Is there a plan for Starship to land vertically alongside Super Heavy?
Yeah, eventually we will see Starships make vertical landings, probably back at special pads near the launch site. Those plans aren't fully fleshed out. I think SpaceX does want to get a lot of good data before they start attempting that. But that day is coming. You know, in some of the early test programs of Starship, we saw these flights up to 10 kilometers where they took that second stage and landed it vertically. So that is coming.
Yeah, I got to see this movie. David, you have a question.
They have a schedule for their human lunar lander that involves Starship. Are they doing any work on the human lunar lander, or is all of their priority on Starship?
Yeah, there's a lot of background. There's a lot of work going on in the background toward fulfilling NASA's Artemis program and helping to put astronauts on the surface of the moon. And that involves Starship going from lunar orbit down to the moon's surface. In fact, they're working toward a really critical test. It's nominally scheduled for the first quarter of next year. We'll see where they do a refueling test in low Earth orbit. And so you would have one Starship launch and then a second vehicle launches pretty quickly thereafter. Then they perform a complex rendezvous and docking maneuver in orbit. They link up and propellant is transferred from one vehicle to another to demonstrate this ability to refuel and store propellant in space. And that's really kind of the next key milestone before they move on to actually trying to land a Starship on the moon.
I want to stay with the chopsticks because it's so fantastic. I've watched a video that they constructed some time ago before they started testing. And it showed this happening not just with one chopstick or two, but dozens laid out in the indefinite future. It looked like Grand Central Station vertical as opposed to horizontal. Now, I think that was projected to be in Texas. Is the plan to have a chopsticks in Florida as well? So chopsticks catching in both Texas and Florida?
Yeah, eventually the plan is to have two launch towers, each with chopsticks in Texas and two in Florida. And the whole idea there is that you get the boosters back, you check them out, and then you put them right back on the launch pad and fly them again. You know, that's the vision. I think it'll take several years for them to get there. But as we've seen with the Falcon 9 operations, one of the reasons why they're doing the chopsticks is when these land on the drone ship, it takes a couple of days to come back to port, and you've got to transfer it, then you've got to do refurbishing and all this stuff. And it's just, they think it's going to be much quicker to just grab it, put it back on the launch pad and do their inspections and restorative work there and then go again. That's the vision, and it's all sort of aimed towards streamlining toward rapid and reusable flight.
And they're bringing that Super Heavy down. It has some fuel in it. It's not full load. They've got enough to land it. They're bringing it down right in the launch complex. As you've said, things can go wrong. They usually do. And then they're ready with more Super Heavy. So they're moving towards an assembly line of launches, making it no big deal, just a day in the park. Is that the vision, Eric?
That is absolutely the vision. From day one, Elon Musk's vision has been for airport like operations.
Yeah.
For launches, and we've seen that reflected in many different ways. At one point, he tried to get rid of the webcast for rocket launches because he's like, no one has a webcast when a plane takes off. So that is definitely the vision, and with the chopsticks, it's just another example of like how they're trying to calibrate toward that future.
We're speaking with Eric Berger. He is the author of Liftoff, Elon Musk and the Desperate Early Days That Launched SpaceX. This is about the creation of the thing we're now seeing, the full Frankenstein itself in Boca Chica and in Florida. And Eric is also the man to read at Ars Technica on all of these matters because he very carefully pursues the meaning of what these events come to, what they mean, and we've been concentrating on a great success. We're going to turn now to an unknown success, which is Starliner, that remains docked at the ISS, built by Boeing. It is a spacecraft for people to go to and from ISS, and it can be used beyond that. Right now, it's important that it succeeds, and there are questions to be asked before it can return to Earth. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. This is Hotel Bars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.